Beloved Book One. When Tosu was in Tojo Province, Joshu asked him, "Aren't you the master of Tosu Hermitage?" Tosu said, "Give me some tea, salt, and cash." Joshu went back to the hermitage, and that evening saw Tosu coming back with some oil. Tosu said to him, "I heard much of Tosu, but all I find is an old man selling oil." Tosu said, "You see the old oil seller, but you don't know Tosu." Joshu said, "Well, how about Tosu?" Tosu held up the bottle and said, "Oil, oil." At the funeral of one of his monks, Joshu joined in the procession and commented, "What a long procession of dead bodies follows in the wake of a single living person."
Manisha, Zen believes in a life which you are not acquainted with. A love that you have not even dreamt. It lives in a totally different dimension. A dimension where everything is a dance. A celebration. Zen is the only religion of life. Others are worshippers of the dead. Life contains millions of things. From the very small trivia to the greatest sacred peaks of consciousness, Zen does not renounce anything, but transforms it as a stepping stone towards the higher. It is the only life affirmative religion that has arisen during the past centuries. Its affirmation is total. All religions are religions of denial. Anything that seems to be a hindrance, they escape from it. Zen tries to turn it from a hindrance into a help, and it has succeeded. Its success is of profound interest for the coming new man. The new man will not think of Christianity as a religion, or Hinduism, or Mohammedanism, or any other religion, because they are all carrying dead past. Life has escaped from them long before. They have not laughed for centuries. They have not been in tune with the universal music. They have forgotten the language of dance. Zen alone seems a possibility for the future man. It will survive when all the religions will be gone. Zen will be the only religion around the earth. In fact, all other religions are already dead. Just because of old habit, old conditioning, we go on carrying them. But they have not contributed anything to human consciousness. Rather than contributing, they have destroyed much. They have enslaved men. They have oppressed men. They have put men against men. They have created immense violence, war, massacre. Zen is a religion of flowers, is a religion of song, is a religion of ecstasy. It has nothing in it which anyway tries to avoid life in any form. It lives life in its totality. And the miracle is that by living totally, each moment becomes so precious that there is no way to measure, to account the beauty of the moment when a person is total here now. These two anecdotes are very small, but great is their significance. The first will look very strange. Unless you understand that each activity a Zen master almost disappears in the action itself. His totality is so much that you can almost say that only the dance remains and the dancer disappears. Once the great dancer Nijinsky was asked, "What are the greatest moments in your life?" Nijinsky said, "The greatest moments in my life are those moments when only the dance remains and the dancer disappears." The same answer was given by Picasso. While he was painting, somebody asked him. He said, "Don't ask anything to me right now. While I am painting, I am just a painter. I am not that great Picasso you have heard about. And when deepest moments come, then even this painter disappears. Only the painting remains." If you can see this point, then the first anecdote will become clear to you, because it is a little out of the way. When Tosu was in Tozo province, Josu asked him, "Are not you the master of Tosu Hermitage?" Tosu said, "Give me some tea, salt and cass." He did not answer the question. That is one of the important things to understand, that Zen answers in its own way, not in the ordinary way we expect dialogues to happen. Josu and Tosu both are prominent masters. And Josu asked him, "Are not you the master, Tosu?" Without saying anything about Tosu, Tosu said, "Give me some tea, salt and cass." What does it mean? It means that you are a great master. You don't need to be answered. You can see yourself that Tosu is standing before you, and to answer you will be insulting. That you could not see yourself, the radiance of Tosu, his presence, his energy field, his aura. No, I will not insult a great master like Josu. That's why he simply ignored the question. This ignoring the question will be taken anywhere in the world as if it is an insult. But in Zen, this ignoring the question has a totally different meaning. It is showing great respect that what are you talking about? You have eyes to see. Just as I can recognize you, you can recognize me. Hence, the question is irrelevant, and I am not going to insult you by answering it. Rather than answering, he asks, give me some tea, salt and cass. I am a poor Zen master. Tosu was a very poor Zen master because he lived on a hermitage in a far away mountain where it was very difficult for people to reach. He has become known as Master of Tosu Hermitage. But he was very poor. So rather than bothering about that I am Tosu, he is showing his poverty. He was known as the poorest master. And one of the greatest souls, but poorest in the sense that he had not much following. He lived in such a strange place that nobody bothered to go there. It was too long, and his behavior was very strange. Josu had just gone there to see him, hearing about him too much. Many rumors were there about him, that why he did not get disciples. He himself is responsible. Because he behaves in such a way that disciples escape. In the first place, nobody goes to that far away hermitage. Sometimes somebody gathers courage, and Tosu behaves in such a way that the man loses heart and tries somehow to escape this strange man. Josu has gone to see Tosu. And Tosu is showing his poverty by asking him, give me some tea. Don't bother about Tosu. In this very moment, I need some tea, some salt and cass. A man of immense understanding. He trusts Josu that he will understand that in this moment, don't ask unnecessary questions. I have not got even tea or salt. and some case. You are a great master, you have thousands of followers, I am a poor master, I don't have any followers. Nobody is responsible for that. I am responsible. I behave in a way that they cannot understand, but I cannot change myself. I have to remain myself. I have to retain my integrity. Whether any disciple remains with me or not does not matter. I am alone enough, but in this moment you must be having some case. You have traveled so far from your monastery, so give me some tea. You must be carrying tea and salt. You have been on a long journey, and a little case won't do any harm. Showing his poverty, that was his fame, that he is the poorest man. Yet one of the greatest masters. By showing his poverty, he is saying, you can see yourself, that Tosu is standing before you asking for cash. Even the poorest have salt, but I don't have even salt. Josu went back to the hermitage, and that evening saw Tosu coming back with some oil. He remained in Tosu's hermitage the whole day, waiting for him to come. But he had disappeared somewhere. By the evening he saw him coming back with some oil. He was so poor, there was no oil even for a lamp in the night. So he must have gone to the nearby village to ask some oil. And he was coming with a bottle of oil. Josu said to him, I heard much of Tosu, but all I find is an old man selling oil. Tosu said, you see the old seller, the old oil seller, but you don't know Tosu. You are looking only at the outside, you are not looking in my eyes. You are not looking in my very being. Josu said, well, how about Tosu? Tosu held up the bottle and said, oil, oil. In this moment, there is no Tosu, but only a bottle of oil. As far as Tosu is concerned, he is an absence. He is just an emptiness, a nothingness. In this moment, at least he has something. In the morning when you had come, he had nothing. So he had asked you for some tea, some salt and a little cash. For the night, I don't have any oil, I am not an oil seller. I have begged this oil from the town, and in this moment, in my emptiness, there is no other thought than simply oil, oil, and nothing else. It is easier to understand Nijinsky when he says that I disappear in my dance. The dance becomes so intense that I am no more. Out of such experiences, Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi, a Sufi mystic, simply made whirling the only method. His followers are called whirling dervishes. They whirl for hours. It is not easy. Jalaluddin Rumi himself whirled for 36 hours continuously. And in the whirling, he became enlightened. Because in the whirling, he got lost. Only whirling remained. There was no one inside. There was utter emptiness and silence. It is easy to understand Jalaluddin Rumi or Picasso or Nijinsky. It is a little difficult to understand Tosu saying that, what are you asking about, Tosu? At this moment, there is only oil. In the morning, even there was not oil. I had asked you for some cash. This is small anecdote between two masters of similar experience, similar greatness, can be of great help to you. Any activity, if it becomes so total that you are completely absorbed in it, it becomes a meditation. Losing yourself and remaining conscious, that is the simplest formula about meditation. At the funeral of one of his monks, Josu joined in the procession and commented, "What a long procession of dead bodies follows in the wake of a single living person." The man who has died was a master. And a master, even in his death, is more alive than you are in your life. The master never dies. That is the very secret that has made him a master, that he knows there is no death. He has got hold of the eternity in his hands. He carries the immortality in his very depths. You can burn his body, but you cannot burn his eternity, his immortality. Josu is right when he says that look at the strange procession. In the wake of one living man, and that living man is lying down in the coffin. Thousands of dead bodies are following to the man of understanding. Unless you are utterly conscious, you can't claim that you are alive. At the most, you can say you are surviving. Just at the minimum. You have not known the Himalayan peaks of life. You have not known the Pacific depths of your consciousness. So thin is your consciousness that it is a miracle that you manage for 70 years to breathe, to walk, to talk, to do all kinds of things. And your roots remain neglected. You don't know even that you have roots. You never nourish your roots. Do you understand that attention is a food for consciousness? In a very unconscious way, you are aware that if nobody pays attention to you, you start feeling a little embarrassed. If the whole city decides one day that nobody will take note of you, as if you are not, you yourself will start suspecting whether I am alive or dead, whether I exist or am only dreaming. You need attention continuously, and that is the struggle between parents and children, and husband and wife, and friends. What is the struggle? Give me more attention. I have seen wives taking away newspapers from their husband's hands. That while I am here, what do you mean by reading the same newspaper the whole day? How many times you have read it? And the poor fellow was simply reading it to avoid getting into any conversation with the wife. Because every conversation ends into fight. Nobody can argue with a woman. As far as I know, up to now, nobody has been able. Because the woman does not allow you to argue. She has her own totally different methodology. She throws things, she breaks plates, she beats small children. That is her argument. And the husband has to agree with her, otherwise she will burn the whole house. He has to say, yes, you are right. And he knows that she is not right at all. But what to do? She has taken such a position that it is better to agree in the very early stages. Later on, it becomes more and more difficult, and distance becomes bigger, and she becomes more and more insane. You cannot argue with insane people. And the woman has found that it is very beneficial to her. The husband has to agree at some point without fail. Just she has to press more and more, give him as much pain in the neck, and finally, she is always the winner. So husbands who are intelligent enough, from the very beginning accept defeat. That's why there is only one kind of husband in the world, and that is henpecked. There exists no other kind, a single category. It is better not to get into argument at all. Two men used to sit in a pub late in the night when everybody is gone. When the pub will be closing, then very reluctantly they will leave. Both were strangers. But by and by, because every night they were the only ones, the last to get out of the pub, finally one inquired the other, "What is the matter? Why you go on sitting here?" He said, "It is very simple. That's why I have not asked you. It is my wife. Until she is asleep, I have to remain here. If I find her awake, then there is bound to be difficulty. Some kind of trouble she will create. And the man asked the other man, "Why you are sitting? I think the same must be the problem." The other man said, "No, I'm not married. There is nobody at the home. Just empty, dark home." The man who had wife, he said, "You idiot, You are the happiest man. You should enjoy your darkness of the house. Listen to me, I am more experienced. You are wasting your time here in the pub. I have to, but you don't have. But this is the problem. The people who have not known women will never know that they are a different kind of creatures. Very nice to look at. Very good to meet at the beach. Just keep away the distance. Once you come closer in their grip, then you know that, my God. Hindus have a temple in Calcutta, perhaps the most famous temple of India. It is a temple of Mother Goddess Kali. A black woman, ferocious, with four hands, in one hand having a naked sword, in another hand the head, just the head, freshly cut, the blood is dripping, and is standing on the chest of her own husband. I have often been to the temple because the people who must have created know some psychology. And the way society is managed, the man thinks he is the master, and the woman allows him to think. Because she knows exactly who is the master. Let him enjoy. Just an idea. No harm in it. Let him enjoy that he is the master. He calls himself husband. Husband means the farmer. And the woman is the earth. And he farms the earth. Let him enjoy all these fictions. But the reality is totally different. These men, these women, quarreling, fighting, never come to know what life in its purity is they don't have time. And strangest of all, I have heard many people playing cards or chess or going to the movie. You ask them for what? And they say, we are going to kill time. And nobody objects that, what are you saying? Time is killing you. From where you got the idea that you can kill time? You cannot even catch hold of time. Time is fleeting so fast. That you can't see it. The speed is beyond your visualization. How can you kill time? But millions of people around the world are killing time in different ways. As if life has been given to them just to destroy it. These people only think they are alive because they have not known the secrets of life. They have not known the silences of the heart. They have never gone in the deepest source of their being. They have never nourished their roots by giving attention to them. The more deeper you go and take your total attention, the more alive you are. And then a change comes from time, you move into timelessness. In time, you are bound to die. In time, things are born and things have to die. If you want to avoid the vicious circle of life and death and the whole agony, the anguish, then you have to move from time to timelessness. And that is a small step. The moment you reach within your very center, you have moved beyond time. You have reached into eternity. That eternity is your Buddha. This is the essential religion. All the prayers of other religions, all their scriptures, all their rituals are not only useless but dangerous. Dangerous in the sense that they are preventing you from finding out the essential religion. They are fake religions. Those fake religions have lost their ground, but just because of old habits, we continue going to the church, going to the temple, going to the synagogue, and all these religions are in the hands of a worldwide priesthood. It does not matter whether that priest is a rabbi or a bishop or a pandit. A great conspiracy against humanity, the priest. Who goes on giving you toys in the name of religion, keeps you engaged, gives you the feeling that you are doing something religious. Keeps you, what Karl Marx says, under the influence of a certain kind of drug, opium. I don't agree with Karl Marx on 1001 things, but on this point that priesthood, religion, has been the opium of the people, I agree with him absolutely, unconditionally, categorically. They keep you dead. They never allow you the chance to have a look into the eternal life. Josu is right when he says, what a long procession of dead bodies follows in the wake of a single living person. You can be a living person only if you are rooted in your center. If you are not rooted in the center and are living only on the circumference, you are just so alive, lukewarm. Without any intensity, without any urgency, without any joy, your life is just an empty world. You have to find your authentic life. It is there, hidden in you. But you go on running everywhere else. You never think of going inwards. The very idea seems to be strange, that what is there inwards? Just an skeleton, blood, bones. What is the point of unnecessarily creating fear for yourself? If you see your skeleton, you will be really afraid. But that is not what we mean by the inward. We mean by the inward going beyond all that is material. Your skeleton is matter. Your blood is matter. Your bones are material. We mean by inward going beyond this skeleton that you think you are. And the going is so simple. Just a little intelligence and you can be alive, a dancing life full of songs and full of flowers. At least for my people, I would like to say, never settle for less. Find out the total secret of your being. Because finding the whole secret of your being, you will find the whole secret of the universe. And then life becomes a totally different phenomenon, a continuous celebration, each moment a festival, each moment the opening of a new dimension, a new mystery. The whole life becomes so full of the miracles that naturally a deep gratitude arises in you to bow down not to any god, but to this universe, which contains the trees and the animals and the birds . This universe is your home. You come out of this universe and you go back into this universe. Prayer is meaningless. Only gratitude. You don't have even to use the word, just the feeling of gratitude. But the feeling of gratitude will arise only when you have experienced the mysteries, the splendor, the whole garden of flowers that is given to you and you had not asked for it and you don't in any way deserve it. You have not earned it. It is a sheer gift from the abundance of existence itself. The existence is heavy, too loaded with splendor. It wants to share, but it cannot share unless you are centered in your being. It can share its secrets only with a Buddha. And you have every opportunity to become a Buddha. Guido wrote, "There could never be an accurate painting of blossoms in the air. Obviously, because the blossoms are always dancing in the air, in the rain, in the sun. How can there be an accurate painting? All photographs will be dead. All paintings will be dead. There could never be an accurate painting of blossoms in the air. Put down your brush and look again closely. It is in the blank space of the background that the figure materializes. What Guido means to say that everything is flowing and changing. There can never be an accurate photograph, because by the time the photograph is taken and from the negative the positive is made, you have changed. You have become older. Photographs don't become old. You are no more the same person. And that applies to all your experience of the world. Everything is in the change, continuously shifting, except one thing, that is your witness. So put down the brush and your camera. Just look, and in looking, remember not to get lost in the scene. Remember the seer. That is the only permanent point you can depend on. That is the only security, the only certainty. The only thing you can rely on. Everything else is going to shift, change. It is all a flux all around. It is beautiful. If you understand it as a flux, it is perfectly beautiful. It becomes a disappointment when you start making it permanent. A meeting of a man with a woman is beautiful, but the moment you start thinking of marriage, you are starting destroying something beautiful that was growing. The moment you reach to the marriage registrar's office. It is still time. Escape from the outside. I have heard about a couple who had gone to the registrar's office and they were filling the form to be married, and the man signed. After the signing of the woman, and the woman immediately said to the magistrate that I want a divorce. He said, are you mad or something? Just now you have only filled the form. What has happened that makes you to ask me for divorce? The woman said, look at this paper. What was on the paper, the man has signed in such big capital letters, and the woman has signed in a small, normal. The man has signed as if it is a headline in a newspaper. The woman said, this is enough. I don't want to get into trouble with this man. He has shown his reality. It is already a conflict. It is better to move out from the very beginning. It is a tremendous experience to go to the registrar's office and watch what goes on happening day by day there. One man, 95 years old, reached to the registrar's office with his wife, 93 years old, and they wanted a divorce. The registrar could not believe. He said, when you got married? And they said, it is so long that perhaps 70 years before, but we are not certain. It seems with the way we have lived in agony and continuous conflict, as if we have been married since eternity. I cannot think of any time in the past when I was not married to this woman. The magistrate said, if you have managed that much, now it is only a question of few months, maybe few years, you are at the very end of the rope. Now what is the point? And if you wanted to divorce because of agony and struggle, why you did not come before? They both said that we were waiting for all our children to die. Today our last son died. Now we are finished. Now at least for a few months or a few years, we can live peacefully. We waited and waited and hoped that one day all will be dead. So we will not be deserting our children. We suffered all kinds of agony, but this hope kept us alive that one day we will divorce. Now don't refuse. We have lived our whole life just for this divorce, just to have few moments of independence, of freedom. Things become difficult because you ask and expect something unnatural. You cannot make in this world anything permanent. Any relationship, and the moment you try to make anything permanent, you are getting into troubled waters unnecessarily, because it is against nature. Nature is a flux, movement and continuous movement is its very nature. Only one thing is unmovable, and that is your very center. So first get deeply rooted in your center and your life will blossom in thousands of flowers. Life can be such a delight if you don't ask anything against nature. Just be in a let go. Things change, let them change. Allow them, help them change. Just remember one thing never changes, and that is your original reality. And that is enough. You are safe, secure. You don't need any other insurance. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, we were told that our total participation in the Yahoo is needed for your work on us. Is it that a crescendo of sound in the Yahoo and the intense experience of silence in the last stage of meditation lead to exactly the same space? The sea of consciousness? Yes, Manisha. Yahoo can lead even deeper. Because Yahoo can become more intense, one-pointed, it can hit deep down. Just you watch when you make the sound Yahoo. It is not a word. It means nothing. It is simply my finding about many sounds which have been used by different mystics in different times, but I have found that Yahoo goes the deepest. It has never been used. Who has been used? And who has been used as part of Allahu? If you repeat Allah, which is the name Sufis give to God, if you repeat it continuously, Allah, 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 soon you will find it is becoming Allahu, 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 Allahu. Then Sufis dropped the Allah. There is no need. Just you can shout who, and it hits at the very center of your being. But my finding is that it only touches who? It only touches your being and immediately comes back. It does not go deep like an arrow penetrating. For that, my experience with Yahoo has been absolutely certain that it goes the deepest in you. It goes just like a sword. It all depends with how much intensity, urgency, totality you do it. It is not a mantra. It is simply using sound to reach the soundless silence. After Yahoo, you are left in a deep silence. It is part of my work on you. And as you will get deeper into it, you will find the changes happening to you. Now it is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. If Sardar Gurdayal Singh leaves his material body, he will have to come as a ghost, holy ghost, just to help all these people with a total laughter. Don't laugh superficially, because that is wasting time. Laugh as totally as possible, bringing your whole consciousness to it. The jokes are just to trigger. Soon I will have to drop jokes, because I must have told more jokes than anybody else in the whole history of men. In fact, I have told more jokes than there are. So sooner or later, we have to change the technique from jokes to spontaneous laughter. Why unnecessarily waste time with a joke when we can laugh without it? It is just for Sardar Gurdayal Singh that I am postponing day by day, because he is old, and any time he may pop out, at least in his lifetime, I think to continue the jokes anyway when he is not here. It will be so embarrassing to tell jokes in his absence. It is Thanksgiving weekend, the big national holiday in America, and at the Sons of Columbus annual picnic, Grandpa Risotto gets up and makes an announcement. And now, he says, for the winner of the Granda Prize, this beautiful apple pie baked by Mrs. Alucci, Granddad Piesta, is sitting at the back of the picnic, a little drunk, and shouts out, "Fuck Mrs. Alucci." "Ah," says Grandpa Risotto, "that is a second prize." An Englishman, an Italian, and a German are exploring the Amazon jungle in Brazil when they are captured by cannibals. They are tied to bamboo poles and carried to spoon them out, the village cook. Says, "Spoon and out." prodding the naked bodies expertly. I don't think we can cook them all together in the soup. But this one, he says, poking to the Italian, we can eat for dinner tonight. He is greasy enough to be fried immediately. This one continues his spoon and out, jabbing the Englishman, we can boil up for the sick people. He has no salt and almost no taste, like tofu. And this one grimaces his spoon and out, eyeing the German, we will soak in water for a week, then he might be less tough and easier to digest. Sydney Silicon, the San Francisco Yuppie, is jogging on a foggy morning along the cliff tops around the way. He loses his way in the fog, gets too close to the edge, tips and falls over the cliff. He manages to grab hold of a small branch which is sticking out halfway down, and there he hangs suspended in space. Help! Screams Sydney. Is anybody there? There is a long silence, and then a loud voice booms from above. Yes, my son, I am here. I am God. Just let go of the branch and my angels will catch you and bring you to paradise. Some seconds go by and then Sydney shouts again, is there anybody there? My son, booms the voice from above, I told you, I am God and I am here, trust me. I know, says Sydney, that you are there, but is not anybody else there? be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total consciousness. With great urgency, as if this is going to be your last moment, just like an spear, go on piercing towards the center. This moment that you are at the center you are a Buddha. This Buddha nature is the only thing that remains forever. Witnessing is another name of Buddha nature. Just remain unwavering at the center and witnessing whatever comes before the mirror to make it more clear. Nividano, relax. Just to witness, you are not the body, you are not the mind, you are only the witness. This experience of being only the witness is what we mythologically call the Buddha. As silence becomes deeper, as your separateness from existence disappears, as this Buddha auditorium contains only consciousness as an ocean, the evening becomes tremendously beautiful. It becomes a festival. Thousands of flowers will be showering on you. Gather as much fragrance, as many flowers to bring back. Slowly, slowly you have to bring the Buddha back on your circumference. In your every activity, in your every gesture, every bird, every silence, you have to show the Buddha. This is the highest achievement in existence. Bring as much of your self nature as possible. Nividano, come back. But remember, each movement of sitting up should be that of a Buddha. Peaceful, graceful, a beauty unto itself. Blissful, grateful. Sit down for a few moments. Just recollecting where you have been. Just remembering the golden path that you traveled to the center and back. Your meditation has to become your very heartbeat. 24 hours you have to remind yourself. Nothing should happen through you which will not be suitable for a Buddha. And soon you will see the great transformation happening. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.